On April 4th, a young man in South Carolina recorded that video on his cell phone of a police officer killing the unarmed black man, Walter Scott. On Monday, a new podcast about Adnan Syed, sentenced to life for the murder of his Woodlawn High School classmate and former girlfriend, kicked off with a 40-minute episode. Those two developments are the subject of today's Midday on Media. What does it mean for mainstream media when some of our most talked about news stories come not from seasoned reporters or network television, but from cell phone cameras? And with 76 million downloads, what does the Serial podcast say about the way we hear the stories of the world and people around us? Midday on Media with Baltimore Sun critic David Zurawiec after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday. As Nathan said, it's Midday on Media, our monthly visit with David Zurawiec, TV critic of the Baltimore Sun, my colleague from Calvert Street. Nice to see you, David.
Nice to be here, Dan. I'm glad we're back together on this.
April is a busy month in television. It has been, anyway. Sunday, HBO premiered the new season of Game of Thrones and the new season of Veep, right?
Yep,
the Maryland-produced political satire. And then last week, we had the beginning of the final season of Mad Men. And, of course, baseball. Orioles are back.
Yeah.
And Orioles are back on TV. So we can talk about some of those things. But I was really struck by a piece you wrote in The Sun April 10th about the Syed case, Adnan Syed. It was the subject of the Serial podcast with 76 million downloads.
Yes.
Last year. Became one of the top media stories of 2014, certainly. And now there's an extension of that that launched on Monday, another podcast. So we talk about that. And we also want to talk about the shooting of video, citizen captured video of police officers' encounters with citizens. Of course, the most recent one, April 4th, when this young barber down in South Carolina recorded a video on his cell phone of a police officer shooting an unarmed black man, Walter Scott, shooting him to death. And these two developments, came together for you and in your thinking about about modern media and about how things happen today. And there's a lot of, we've gone through a lot of changes and continue to go through a lot of changes. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk about these two media stories, the Syed case, the idea of a podcast that people download and listen to when they want to, storytelling in that method. And then the other thing, the citizen-generated, citizen-captured video that becomes a major news story.
Yeah, they came together, Dan, in a not so weird way. I thought it was at the time, but now that I think about it, it kind of makes sense. Last week, because we knew the podcast called Undisclosed, the State versus Adnan Syed, was going to debut on Monday, and we thought that was a big deal. I still think it is a big deal. I don't want to talk about it in the past tense because another one's going to arrive in two weeks, and the producers of the podcast intend to keep it going at least through Syed's appeal, which is supposed to be heard in June.
Just a note, this is a young man who is serving a life sentence for the murder of his former classmate, former girlfriend at Woodlawn High School several years
in
ago.
In 1999, yeah, 1999.
Right.
And the folks from This American Life, Sarah Koenig, not as part of This American Life, but as on their own, did the Serial podcast, which was this phenomenon.
And then you have the new episode,
yes.
40-minute episode that launched on Monday.
Yeah, and it's important, really, for listeners, and especially, and I'm assuming a lot of folks in your audience know about this because it's public radio at its best. But it's important to note that the podcast that launched Monday, Undisclosed, has nothing to do in terms of production with the Serial podcast, which was done out of Ira Glass's team. This is done by Rabia Chaudhry, who was a lifelong friend. She's of Adnan Syed. She's an attorney. I didn't know this really until I talked to her this week. I didn't know the extent of this. I had written and followed Serial and written about it. But Rabia is a fascinating story because she is also a social media expert, educator, and activist.
A journalist.
No. And she's very clear about that. I like that about her. But she's the one who brought the Adnan Syed case to Sarah Koenig And with her social media skills, which are pretty impressive, she is the one, I think, who drove this guy into America's consciousness. And that was what struck me. This was somebody outside the mainstream, outside the stream of legacy journalism, outside the gatekeeper world that you and I grew up in, who had the power. Now, she had to go to Sarah Koenig to get it done in a really first-rate podcast.
To get that commitment from This American Life's team to do
yes,
that.
But it right. was driven by social media, by digital technology, and someone who wasn't a journalist. Okay, so as I'm...
But excuse me, I just wanted to say that I don't know how different that is from the old model, except for the technology, right? I mean, in the past, or any time that I've had a story come to me similar to this about someone who's in prison, maybe wrongly convicted, wrongly accused person, it's an advocate that contacts the press.
It's actually
a lawyer, often.
Yeah, actually, and it's a good point because you're one of the people who I think the community knows is opening to listening to people from the community.
Right.
And so you've had a career of doing of listening to those folks, bringing their stories to it.
So I don't find it that unusual.
Yeah, I think in that sense, you're absolutely right. There is still a gatekeeper function, although a podcast is not... the New York Times or the Baltimore Sun website. Anybody.
I'm with you.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
What's unusual, I think, different here is this new episode.
Yes.
Who produced the new episode?
Well, that was what was interesting. When I talked to Rabia last week, she said, oh, no, I said, are you going to have a professional producer do this? And she said, no, we're just doing it. It's all amateurs, all volunteers for the Adnan Syed Defense Fund. And she's raising money for that. And I thought at the time, I went, wow, to myself, you know, and then I interviewed her and she's great. She's a really forthright person, laid it all out there. But by Thursday and Friday of last week, she and, Susan Simpson, I think, and Colin Miller, the other two lawyers who are involved with her, were starting to feel the pressure of producing a podcast and the pressure of the expectations of what Sarah Koenig did with hers. Well, given all of that, they got their podcast out Monday. Good for them. I had to review it, and so did Julie Sharper at The Sun, and we talked about it. And in a nutshell, it wasn't produced very well. They didn't use a professional producer, as far as I can tell. And what happened is, Dan, you know, the first time you go over to cover a court case, it's like, how in the heck am I going to make sense of this?
Yeah, yeah.
Julie told me the funniest story when we were talking about this. Julie said, when I went to cover my first court case for The Sun, she said, I thought it was going to be like To Kill a Mockingbird. Instead, it's 8 hours of two lawyers arguing
yeah.
about whether we can stipulate that right. the street bends this way or that way.
Right. No, it's complicated.
Yes.
You actually need a professional journalist is one person who could do it to sort of explain it to the public in a clear way.
Well,
right?
and
so what do you have in this new podcast?
Well, that's the problem. There's the synthesis of you have to take like 8 hours of testimony, boil it down to 500 or 1,000 words that are interesting to your editors and then the readers.
Yeah. But
they didn't do it. No, they did what lawyers do, and they were in the weeds on this, you know, from the beginning. And I'm telling you, by the time they were talking about whether that day of the young woman was murdered, whether it was an A day or a B day on the student schedules, whether they had social science first or English first, I was checking baseball scores in Oklahoma college games because I was so bored.
Okay.
But
what's the but?
Here's the other thing. They didn't understand the aesthetic and the sensibility of public radio podcasting at its best. It's a real skill, you know?
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
Why didn't the team at This American Life, led by Sarah Koenig, why didn't they help them with this podcast? Why didn't they produce it?
There was no reason to, and I'll tell you, I think the main reason I'm glad they didn't is because Rabia is an advocate for Syed, you know, and she, you know, at the best it would be advocacy journalism, And at the worst, people might think it's propaganda for his innocence. So they shouldn't be involved. I mean, I really don't think they should be involved. And look, they brought this case to them.
Excuse me. Wouldn't you have to make a put yourself in Sarah's shoes? You would see what the material is, what they're bringing to you that's new. Is it newsy? Is it worth another episode?
Yeah,
and then you could walk away from it and say no.
Yeah, but they wanted to control it. Rabia wanted to control it. And, of course, you couldn't do that if you were Sarah. Don't forget, during the original serial, there was some back and forth in social media from Rabia questioning Sarah, and there was jockeying for who's going to control this story.
Right.
So that's what it was about. It was control, and that makes sense. But as literally, I hung up the phone from interviewing Rabia, and on my screen, while I was talking to her on my TV screen on my desk at the Sun newsroom, I wasn't even paying attention because I had the sound off, but the video of Mr. Scott being shot was playing over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, well, here's another case. Rabia took this story of this young man and really pushed it in the national consciousness. And a big part of it was, of course, Koenig, but other was the social media that she did. And it was a little podcast. I mean, nobody expected.
No one expected that, yeah.
Meanwhile, this barber, Mr. Santana, 23-year-old from the Dominican Republic, I think, is on his way to work. He sees this shooting. He records it on his iPhone, which I think is a great act of courage to stand there and record it. He even said he thought about erasing it because he was afraid of the police.
Courage and presence of mind to push the push the right record button, right?
And that video is dominating. This was last Thursday. That video is dominating the national conversation. And again, it's a citizen who's generating it. And I thought, not only are the citizens doing these images, but we don't even have the gatekeeping function anymore, because if they brought it to us and the Sun said, oh, we can't vet it, we're not going to run it, it'd go somewhere else and it'd be all over the place anyway. We're not even, not only aren't we the generators of these images, but we're not the gatekeepers in some sense. And that
is... You mean it will get out anyway.
It'll get out anyway. Right. And then it'll drive the national conversation. Remember, for most of my professional career as a media critic, one of the things I was always fascinated by early on and kept writing about is how the media sets the national agenda and determines, and the local agenda, and determines what we'll talk about and who's important and who's not. Man, that train left the station. We lost that power.
Right.
We have to. Well, we have some of it. I shouldn't overestimate it. I mean, I shouldn't overstate this.
But does that mean anything goes?
Pardon?
Does that mean anything goes?
No, because we're in not yet, Dan. And a big part of it is how we behave, how the people who are trained as journalists and who have ethical principles and professional principles, how we behave. I think what we have to do at this point is acknowledge how digital technology has changed the world we live in. And most people have. Otherwise, if they haven't, they're out of business. You know, I mean, most good papers know they're going to live or die in digital space. But we have to say, look, we can't. Citizens are now shooting those pictures. They have the technology to do it. We can't stop them from getting out there. What's our role in this? And our role, I think, is one of the primary functions that it's always been for the press and the media, to provide a responsible forum for the discussion of these events, which is what happens right here. I mean, this is what you do every day. So I'm not talking to a choir, I'm talking to a preacher. But that's what we can do, and that's an important part of it. But the two things came together on my desk, and I said, okay, here's my Sunday column anyway about this. And, you know, here's the other part of this that I think is really, the more I thought about it as I was writing that. Remember in the 19—we now have this historical consensus that one of the things that really spurred the civil rights movement and really kicked it up a notch in terms of national power was when CBS and NBC News sent their film crews, their nightly news crews, down to the South, and the filmmakers, the reporters and filmmakers, captured images of Southern police using attack dogs and fire hoses on peaceful protesters.
Right. And got on the evening news with Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, and it was film in those days.
And you could say the same thing about Vietnam.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Same thing. And they had to put the film on a plane and send it up and then edit it and blah, blah, blah. And it might have taken a day or so. But
some people listening today may not appreciate what that was.
Yes.
How disturbing, how what's the word, gut-wrenching it was to see, you know, wounded soldiers, dead soldiers on video in Vietnam.
Yes.
See people being hosed down in southern cities who were, you know, marching for civil rights.
And this was post-war America in the American century when we were filled with optimism and believed we were going to keep making the world better and better and better. And then we look at pictures in our own South. And I think the effect of that is that, look, racists are racists. You maybe you can't change them. I don't know. But the reasonable people or even fair-minded people who looked at those pictures and were shocked by them said this is a problem. And a lot of people attribute some of the support out of the North in terms of people going down and helping the civil rights campaigns in the South from seeing those images on TV.
Okay, so let's go to the distinction. So this is professional film that was made on assignment by news film.
Highest priced film news crews, people you can get,
right? Who went to Vietnam, who went to the South.
Right.
And captured that. Except for the Zapruder film.
Right.
Which was made by a citizen's, 8mm, what is it? 16mm.
Oh, it's a home movie camera.
Home movie camera, right?
Yeah.
You don't have many.
1963, Dallas.
Yeah, you don't have many examples of that.
Right.
Right now, people have smartphones.
Yes.
They're everywhere, right?
Yes.
So everyone who has one potentially could become that citizen who captures this moment.
Totally. You can change the world.
Captures news, right?
That's totally it.
All right. So the question that I have then is what's the role of, say, a newspaper or a local TV station or a network, any of them, what we call the mainstream, in the use of that video that captures a news moment?
That's exactly it. That's what I'm saying is...
When I ask you, does anything go? Does that mean if a video comes to the Baltimore Sun, that means we have to use it? Because if we don't, it's going to end up on Twitter. It's going to end up and then be out there every place.
It doesn't. And as far as I know, and I've had discussions about it, the Sun is crystal clear on this. New York Times is crystal clear on this. We understand what's going on out there. Okay, we understand how it can help our fortunes to just throw anything up on any video. Video's the coin of the realm on websites now. Okay, so we understand how hot it is and how great it would be. But the Sun is crystal clear. We don't put anything up until we vet it. Now, we might take stuff from people. We're happy to look at it.
We verify it.
We make sure. Listen, because there's a whole host of stuff going on, Dan. Not only do we have to try to vet it, that it's not staged, that it's not edited, that it's not an ideologue or a propagandist putting this together to fool us. They're leaving out a shot. They're leaving out a frame that makes it all totally recontextualizes it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing we have to understand. And so we can't possibly put this up without doing that. It gives us a disadvantage in terms of what's up there on the web, but we have to keep those standards. And then we have to set up a discussion for analyzing it and making sense of it for our audiences. So we have a huge role.
Okay. We're going to talk some more about that with David when we get back. But also the question I would pose on the Adnan Syed case, in this latest, I won't even call it an installment. I would call it a postscript, new episode in the Serial series, not produced by the Serial team from This American Life.
Right.
Did you listen to it?
Yeah.
That's my question to my listeners.
Oh.
Not just you. I know you did. But and does it have less credibility because it wasn't produced by Sarah Koenig and her colleagues at This American Life?
Oh, I'd love to hear what. Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
410-662-8780 is the number for Midday on Media. Dan Roderick's here with David Zurawiec. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday on Media, our monthly visit with Baltimore Sun TV critic David Zurawiec here on the Midday Show with Dan Roderick. 410-662-8780 is the number. So I want another question to follow up on this podcast that was launched on Monday called Undisclosed,
right?
Did the Serial people, I'm not going to say give it its blessing, but allow it to be called part of Serial?
No, it's nothing.
So it's not affiliated with Serial?
In any way, shape, or form, yeah.
All right. You just describe it as another episode in this series, but produced by advocates for Adnan Syed.
Yeah, no,
I was careful.
Yeah, I was careful in my writings not to describe it. And we at The Sun were very careful about that.
So I wonder how those who followed this serial series last year felt about this. If you listen to it, you recognize it for what it is. It's done by his advocates. But as David said you found it boring, a little confusing. It needed better setup. It needed better. It needed more infrastructure, so to speak. It needed to be better structured.
Yeah, you know, I don't. Maybe. Well, I think you're right from what I said
it
here.
It needed a professional journalist.
Yeah, it needed. You know what it needed, Dan? You got a ton of information. Okay, a ton of information. No doubt about it. It needed a clothesline to hang that information on. It needed a narrative.
Yeah.
Now here's the kind of catch 22. Rabia says that she admits she's an advocate for Syed, but the other two lawyers, she said, have never said whether he's innocent, so that they're giving you objective information. Hmm. So in a way, Rabia wants to have it both ways. Their clothesline could be, the horse they could ride through this mountain of information could be, he's innocent. And then people who believe that will follow it, and that's your audience, but you lose everybody else, of course. Here's what they're saying. There's a lot of, the first trial was a mess. The original trial was a mess, okay, in 1990 for them. They're saying there's a lot of information that listeners didn't get, even in the serial podcast.
Right, I get that. Mm-hmm.
And that they're finding it. And the Susan Simpson, I interviewed her as well. She seems like a real investigator. She seems like an investigative reporter. You know, she found, for example, that in the consensus is that the day that the young woman was murdered, that she was on her way to some kind of a track meet or some kind of event at Randallstown High School. And that's what the court record shows. But she went back and did some more digging now, pulled all the records of high school events and found there was no event at Randallstown that day. Hmm. That's the kind of work they're doing, you know? Okay. They also have a lot more about the cell towers and the phone calls and what was possible and what wasn't. Robbie also told me they have more information on the autopsy. And so they're saying we're presenting, but they're presenting it the way an attorney would present it at trial. That's the problem.
And I wonder if people who followed the original series went for that.
Yeah.
Listen to it.
I do too. I really am.
Justin in Baltimore, he tried to listen to it, he says, the other day. Justin, welcome to Midday. Justin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah,
how are you?
Good. Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, like I was just saying, I was so in love with the story of Syed, and I attempted to listen to this latest installment, and it just really kind of was boring to me. I think that there's a lack of an aesthetic there, and that's really what we were speaking about earlier with the gatekeepers. That's the role that they need to play now, traditional media. Gatekeepers is really pushing forth the aesthetic that people look for when they're listening for a narrative or the storytelling. It just lacked that, and that really translated through with this latest installment. And again, I study digital communications at University of Baltimore, so I'm very interested in stuff like this. I listen for it all the time, and it just is very apparent that aesthetic needs to be in place.
Thank you very much, Justin. It's like if you get a data dump, right?
Yeah,
you need somebody to sort of chip through it, throw this out, and say, this is what you need. Now, others will say, well, no, I want all of it. But you don't. I mean, you're going to be bored, believe me.
No, and I'll tell you something that's very, I think, revealing about Justin's call. And thanks again, Justin, for calling in, because I think this is really good. I think, in a way, the lawyers who did this, the undisclosed podcast, underestimated that audience in some way. Look at how sophisticated a listener he was. He's had college, university training in digital communication, understands this immediately. You know, in the video I did, see, this is it. You know, it used to be, Zurich writes a review. No, I cut a video talking about their podcast,
right, which
was based on a previous podcast, because we'll get more traffic online, hopefully, for a video than we will Zurich writing a post about it. Although we had a post from Julie, too, so we double-teamed it.
Do you mind if I ask you, is that true? When you do these videos, commentaries, and they post them on BaltimoreSun.com, do those get more views than your blog posts?
I'm going to be.
Do you know?
I know some of it. You know what I know?
Is this proprietary information?
I'm not. You know what? No, this is.
I work in the same place. I never asked this question.
Yes, you have. You work in the same place as me, and now Zurich's sitting there saying, "Don't get yourself in trouble, Z." But also, don't ever go in the media and lie to anybody, because that's the way you end your career. So I'll tell you what I know to be true, and I don't think it's the whole picture. And I think it's because I'm one of the guys down. I'm one of the Roman centurions down in the dust, you know, eating my crust of bread. And they don't tell me everything. They just say, we're going into battle over there. And if you see guys wearing blue tunics, kill them, Zurich. We're not going to tell you why. We're not going to tell you who's going to get rich. But no, seriously.
I guess I'm down there with you.
I just didn't
think of that until now.
Well, you're not as
hand me a piece of that bread.
As paranoid. No, the rats are eating it now. We don't get it. But seriously, you can cut a video. Video is really popular online, and sometimes when I do a video, and it's interesting because if I thought about this, even though I'm a critic, if you start thinking about your own media performance, I would be paralyzed and I'd be awful. So, you know, Andy Bienstock here laughs about I've done radio over here 15, 20 years and I've learned nothing. You know, he'll give me a sign for 30 seconds and I'll go, what's that? And then Lisa Morgan will go, Zurich, we've been giving you that sign for 15 years. When are you going to learn it? So it's the same thing with TV and it's the same thing with videos. But what you can do with a video, and sometimes, depending on who links to you and how it's picked up and how controversial it is, you can blow the you can shoot the lights out with a blog post too. But I think it's a little easier to do it, and it's a little more efficient in a way because writing takes time. A video you can cut literally in the time it makes, and then somebody can edit it. You can have it up in 15 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
And you do it in one take?
We've been doing one take. We did a two take.
That's impressive, David.
We did a two take on this because I went too long. and I like, you know, I like the aesthetic of the newsroom shot that they shoot the Sun newsroom. I love that. I love being in that newsroom, Dan. I gotta admit it.
Yeah, but, same here.
To me, I don't know, but it is.
I have a question about video. Yeah. This is to our listeners.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about the South Carolina video. As we were watching that, of course, it's very disturbing. But I was thinking about this man holding his cell phone up for that duration.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's bumps in it a little bit here and there. But there's a lot of it is
solid,
steady shooting of a video. And, you know, for a moment there, when the officer who had just shot this man is just, it's just him and the fellow with the camera with the cell phone behind the chain link fence. And I was a little worried for him at
too.
That moment.
I did too. He went and talked to the police, and they told him to go stand over on the side.
Okay.
And then he went to the barber shop.
I wonder how many people now are thinking more about this as you go about your daily life. You know, you got a cell phone in your pocket. You're on a bus. You're on a city street. You're out to dinner with friends. You're in traffic. I don't know where. And you see something. Are you more inclined to pull this camera out now? I'm just curious. I haven't asked this question on the air. We were talking about this a little bit with Sherry Parks last week too, and I was wondering, is this going to make people more inclined to pull it out when they see something that looks a little weird to them?
Well, you know, I think you tweeted about this, about us talking today, and I think it was this morning, and you link to a video we have, a citizen video we have from Baltimore.
It's fresh from Sunday, I think, over the weekend.
Is that
in
on
Baltimore.
Your Facebook page?
If you haven't seen it, it's a story about a way the police handled a situation with a man who ended up pretty seriously injured.
Yeah.
We don't know the whole story there.
No,
though.
Because they came in late on it.
Yeah.
And when I was watching it, the person who shot it was quite far away and didn't close the distance on the lens, you know, to bring it up. And it kept moving and it would go off the frame in the corner. And at first I was like, to myself as I'm watching it, because it's so riveting, I was like, move it, you know? And then I'm going, wait a minute, this is a citizen shooting this and this is a real life event, Zurich. It's not an HBO documentary. Calm down. To even myself, I think we're developing a sense of expectations, what the caller called an aesthetic, I think, for these kinds of video in a way. I mean, and you know what? It's true. I wrote about this last year. The very rawness of it, the jumpiness of the frame, the uncertainty of where it's going to go next, because you know it's not a professional, lends an authenticity to it that no news footage almost is going to have.
He said he was afraid to come forward at first, right?
Yes.
I'm just wondering if people have thought about that in the days since this particular video. Of course, we also had the video from Staten Island, New York, Mr. Garner in a chokehold
police. Yeah,
you know, I'm just curious whether people are thinking more about that. You know, when you see something weird, you pull out a camera. That moment when you pull out a camera, it's sort of making a statement in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, you know,
that you think something's up here. Right?
It is. I heard, I think it was C-SPAN overnight that I was listening to, and I didn't catch what it was, but it was some kind of, it was a community meeting of some kind, and it was leaders, the community leaders, telling the audience members there that they now have this really effective tool for changing life in their communities. And it said, if you see something that looks strange to you, get out, start shooting pictures. Stand with the young. If you see somebody pulled over, and it was an activist statement. I mean, it was a political statement. They were not talking journalism. They were talking community activism. But I really do think it's growing in that way. And the point I wanted to make earlier, Dan, is that I think these images, and you just reminded me of it with the Eric Garner case, we have now seen enough of these that they are starting to have the cumulative effect of what those evening news images from the South had on the national consciousness in the 60s. I think people are saying, you know, people who are reasonable or fair-minded see something like that shooting in South Carolina and go, maybe the issue of police-community relations in some communities are much worse than we're led to believe.
David Zerwick, our guest, the TV critic, media critic of the Baltimore Sun, 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. By the way, David, before we take this break, where do you get to listen to this podcast, the new podcast related to Serial, Undisclosed?
Yeah, I think if you just go, if you just Google, somebody can search. Undisclosed is in the title, I know that, and it's undisclosed-podcast.com, but I'm not sure what the first part of it. I'm sure we can get it in 2 seconds.
Okay,
from one
we'll
of
do
the
it during this break, and we'll actually put a link to it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page.
Yeah, good.
A short break, 410-662-8780. We'll be right back. And this is the Midday Show, Midday on Media. Dan Roderick's here with David Zerowick of The Sun. Carol writing in, David, on email. She says, I witnessed a school police officer rough-handling a woman for about 5 minutes. I was too frozen to pull out my cell phone to record the event, but I thought about it. The family of the woman who shot the video in Staten Island claims they have been harassed by the police ever since. The woman is not living at home. Our Midday email address for your comments, midday@wypr.org. Can we move on and talk about Veep?
Yes. Yeah, I'd love to.
The good news is that Veep has been renewed for another season.
Yes, but it might not be. Might not come back to Maryland.
So talk about that. It's been produced here since the onset.
It's been produced here in Columbia. Soundstage is out in Columbia. The cast and crews, the crew, the actors stay at the Harbor East Homewood Suites, and it's been really nice. In addition to Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who really is the greatest comedic actress in the history of television, at least with awards, and I think it's
love her.
I think it's in terms of her talent as well. The genius of this show is the creator Armando Iannucci, who created a brilliant political satire called In the Loop. It's a feature film. It was up for an Oscar, In the Loop with Peter Capaldi, and it is just brilliant. It's really, in a way, some people might think Veep would be loosely inspired by it because of the tone, but it's British and American politics. Iannucci is Scottish. He lives in London. Anyway, for 4 seasons, he did this brilliant series. Last week, HBO announced that he's not coming back for a 5th season. He doesn't want to leave London and spend 4 to 6 months in Baltimore. It's really down to 4 months they have it a year. And it's nothing against Baltimore. He likes Baltimore, but he likes London more. Also, he wants to. There's some talk that he's going to write the Doctor Who movie version. He also wants to write a movie he's working on about Joe Stalin. This is the kind of guy. This is
Joe?
Joseph Stalin.
You mean Joseph?
Yes.
I've never heard him called Joe. I'm sorry.
Armando calls him Joe. That's how deep a guy this is. So Armando Iannucci, to me, is the best political satirist going. Jon Stewart is a midget compared to him. Jon Stewart makes jokes about people being stupid in Washington, and they're very smart jokes. By our standards of American television, very funny. Armando Iannucci takes on the entire political system. In the first episode that aired Sunday night, and I'm sure some people saw this, he has five angry men come in and start yelling at the aides to Selina Meyer.
The vice president.
Yes. She's president now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot.
It's no longer Veep. It's whatever. It's POTUS. No. But she's going to cut $50 billion from the budget. And she thinks it's a clean cut. And she's not going to have any problems because it's for an obsolete submarine program. Except just as she's going into the Congress, into the chamber to make the speech where she's going to announce this cuts in her first joint session, these five angry men come in to the room to talk to her aides. And it's an aria of profanity, as only Iannucci invented using the F word creatively, if you think anybody else did. But they explain to her that every piece of that sub is made in a different state. Even though it's obsolete and worthless, it means thousands of jobs in those states. And in each of those states, she is going to get no votes any longer for her version of Affordable Care Act, which is called Families First. Vague term means nothing, but
right. It's big. Okay.
And they tell her she's dead. She will never get another thing through Congress. And when they walk in, they're introduced as the military-industrial complex. Only he could personify the military-industrial complex as these five profane men. When I asked them about it in an interview 2 weeks ago, I said, what's your inspiration for that guy who's saying all these horrible things, who's explaining this? And he says, Lyndon Johnson. You know? So losing this guy really is bad news. But that's on a cosmic level of political satire in American television. On a local level, where all politics live, the fact that Iannucci is leaving as showrunner for this series means that it might not come back to Maryland, according to HBO. They hired a new showrunner right away from Curb Your Enthusiasm, a Larry David show, and showrunners can have a large voice in where a show gets made. And I don't know if you know what his deal is yet. Nobody's telling me at HBO. But, if he lives in L.A., his deal could be, yeah, I'll take over that show, but I'm not moving to Baltimore 6 months out of the year.
Has Veep raised the issue of state support for its production here the way it has been raised with House of Cards?
Veep has gotten its incentives, every year. Mm-hmm. It's smaller, but they're satisfied with it. You know, HBO really likes working out of Baltimore. This is a funny thing, too, Dan. This is interesting because the production community here, which used to talk about this a lot, has been strangely silent. And I think here's my guess on this, that this won't surprise you. One of the things I hate about Maryland politics is everybody wants to do everything behind closed doors, And anytime somebody's going to give something to somebody in Annapolis, one of the things I think they tell them is, okay, we can work this out behind closed doors. You don't talk to the press. You don't talk to this. Good. Okay, guys? Mm-hmm. I'm going to see what happens. I'm going to see if they get taken care of behind closed doors in Annapolis, because I think that's a real bad way to
you
do it.
You think this was going on with Veep and House of Cards?
I do. I do. And nobody's been a better help at getting information to the community about how important that money is to people who work in that production community in Maryland. So if they want to cut us out of the loop, fine. Let's see what happens.
Before we go back to the phone lines, take some calls about the earlier subject of the videos, the citizen captured video from South Carolina. in New York. I thought we would just listen to a clip from Veep, if that's okay.
Cause sure. Because
we like Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah. This is from last season, so that was season three. We're in season four now.
Right, we're in season four.
So this is just a funny one. She's aboard a Coast Guard boat in the Coast Guard ship in the Baltimore Harbor.
Baltimore Harbor, yeah.
They intercepted an individual untracked vessel, suspicious cargo. They're requesting backup.
Oh, is it a drug boat?
We're looking into it, ma'am.
Well, that's a stroke of luck.
I'm gonna do a short little video thing.
Okay.
The drugs stop here.
Oh!
No. Don't say anything right after, because it ruins it.
Got it.
The drugs stop here.
We need to go, ma'am.
Yes.
Just
thank
one
you.
Got it.
They stop here. Firm.
The drugs stop here.
Nice.
Thank
one
you.
Thing. Okay. This definitely does not do video.
I'm sorry?
Well, then what were you doing?
Perfect.
Use your common sense next time.
Just when I had finally started getting comfortable with the idea of Frank Underwood in the White House, meaning Kevin Spacey's Frank Underwood from the Netflix series House of Cards, here comes Selina Meyer in season four of Veep as President of the United States. And guess what? She's doing in one of the early episodes this month. She's negotiating with Iran, and she gets a deal, too, just as the real president reached the outline of one last week. So this is from David Zerwick's writing about, you really like Veep.
I love it. Yeah. I think it's the best political satire we've had.
David, some calls on the earlier subject, so we'll take those here. 410-662-8780 is our number. Sam in Bel Air, thanks for calling Midday on Media. Hi.
Yes. On the Eric Garner case, where they choked the man to death, the only person who has been arrested in that whole case, and his whole family has been arrested, his mother and his wife also, on unrelated charges, they basically went after these people, was the guy who took the pictures. He's been arrested. He's currently in jail. His mother was arrested, and his wife was arrested. The police went after them with both feet and arms. You know, I mean, it's disgraceful. And they couldn't charge the cop who choked him to death and the ones who held him down and the ones who didn't assist him when he was laying there on the ground dying. You know, even the EMTs who showed up a little while later, they were suspended for not assisting the guy because they didn't,
Yeah, the fact that the police officers haven't been charged in that case and weren't charged in the case in Ferguson. I mean, this is not unusual. This has been it's rare that officers are charged, much less convicted of charges related to their use of force in arresting citizens. Now, is any of this going to change? Well, it certainly changed in South Carolina. The story quickly changed from the story the police officer gave from the scene once the video got out. That story changed completely.
Yeah, within 24 hours, he was charged with murder. And again, Dan, I think it's the accumulation of these images. I think, honestly,
image stands on its own.
But it builds up this mountain of stuff. Okay, maybe nothing happens in the Garner case, but then you get this one and the person who's seen this one and another one and maybe Cleveland, and then they start to say, hey, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Then you get the will for a change.
Yeah, the change that I think may come of this is independent prosecutors looking at these cases, where you don't have district attorneys who work closely with police departments making an evaluation about whether someone should be charged or grand juries. I think an independent prosecutor may be one of the reforms you see.
Yeah, and way over here, I heard a debate that's going on about body cameras and all the negotiations back and forth, because everybody now says put cameras on the police. But now they're saying, well, what parts of the police state do I have to have them on? It's changing policing. Change is coming as a result of this.
Pat in Baltimore, you're up next. Thanks for calling Midday.
Sure. Thank you. There is a book called The Book of Meme Law that establishes that when we create a community or a human social organism, that we need enforcement of the ideas that are held by the people in power. And the police are exercising and have been exercising that enforcement on marginalized people as a natural protection of the or exercise of the protection of these ideas. And now, the more educated our population becomes, and the more caring, it will call these things to the carpet, this exercise will be challenged. Whether it changes or not is a good question.
I think the video has changed everything. Maybe people are more educated, more hip to all this, and savvy, and concerned, and questioning. But these videos make the difference.
Oh, yeah, and they'll eventually change attitudes, and then your attitudes will change your laws. I mean,
going back to your comparison with the 60s and images of civil rights workers or marchers being harassed, beaten by police, right? That changed things.
Of course.
The images from Vietnam, that you could say that accelerated the end of that
marching
war.
In the streets, students in the streets. Yeah. Students were affected by their parents.
A president decided not to run for re-election
in 1968.
But I think it's the images, these moving images.
Technology. Yeah, or for better or worse, we are driven by these images. I think we absolutely are. That's where we live in this, for about 40 years, I've thought of this as Media America. We know more of our reality comes from media, I think, than from our own lives these days. So those images are supremely important. There's bad stuff about that. You know, politicians, can spend all their money on videos and creating campaign ads, and that's what we elect. We elect a person in a campaign, the new Nixon in 68. We elected that guy.
Well, that's interesting, because Hillary Clinton decided to announce her her much-anticipated campaign
the
for
new
president
Hillary,
in a video.
Yes.
What did you get to see the video?
I did.
What did you say about it? I saw you had a piece. I didn't read it yet.
It was a smoothly crafted, it was a solid video. It actually borrowed from a series of American Express ads for small businesses in 2009. Vox was calling it the greatest breakthrough video in the history of the world. I said, no, actually, they borrowed it from an American Express ad in 2009, which borrowed it from 1984 Ronald Reagan's Morning in America. So it's not revolutionary, but it was a well-done ad. What was interesting to me is that they were trying to create a new Hillary Clinton. Well, if you had a good public record, you don't have to run as the new Hillary Clinton. You could run as the old Hillary. And it's exactly what they did with Richard Nixon in 1968.
But I didn't think there was much emphasis on Hillary.
No.
Most of the emphasis was on the people that she says she wants to serve,
right?
She's going
to help,
So it was interesting.
You know, if
approach.
I hear one more politician say hardworking middle-class families, it's like everybody. Who's against the hard work? Thank you.
One final comment here. Tom, by email, says the saddest part with all these police videos is that this behavior is nothing new. It's just that now that middle class America is looking in the window of what has always been.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying, and that's a very good point. It is, and I think sad is an appropriate word.
Hey, we have a sort of a TV star on the show tomorrow. Two-time Top Chef finalist Brian Voltaggio.
He's going to be
on midday tomorrow during the noon hour. He's got a cookbook out, Home Cooking, Chesapeake Comfort Food, how to cook, how to prepare weekend brunches, Sunday suppers. You know, he's got 5 restaurants.
Which one is his down at the Harbor East? Is that Adagio? Is that Agio?
Agio. And then there's Volt.
Is that Agio? That's where everybody from Veep eats. Matt Walsh, the guy who plays the press secretary, Matt McClintock, told me last week that was their favorite restaurant this year. That was
Agio.
Yeah. They loved it there.
So Brian's on the show tomorrow at noon. And then we have Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell in the second hour tomorrow. Anyway, David Zurich, look for his column and his blog post and his videos at BaltimoreSun.com. David, thanks for being here again.
Thank you, Dan. Only the rant videos, Phil.
Rants. Yeah, go, for more of David's rants, go to BaltimoreSun.com. He joins us once a month here for Midday on Media, third Wednesday of every month. Enjoy the afternoon, folks, and please come back tomorrow for Brian Voltaggio at noon, Rona Cabell in the second hour of Midday on Thursday.